From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis, guest host of this edition of PCUSA. As the world grapples with COVID-19 and how it is affecting our lives, from the way we shop to the way we work, there is another aspect to the disease that has been getting little attention on the global scene, and that is how disease outbreaks and pandemics, such as COVID-19, may trigger and increase violence and exploitation of women and girls. Joining me via Skype to provide insight into this phenomenon is Dr. Natalia Kanem, Executive Director of UNFPA, the United Nations Sexual and Reproductive Health Agency. The UNFPA finds disease outbreaks affect men and women differently, and that pandemics make existing inequalities worse for women and girls. They find that this discrepancy should be considered when treating women and girls, as well as people living with disabilities and people living in poverty. Well, Dr. Kanem, thank you so much for taking the time to join me via Skype during this very hectic and challenging time. First of all, if you can tell us, what is your main concern during this COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, thank you so much, Kim. I am happy to join you and your listeners because what I'm most worried about is that even in the best of times, women already can face inequalities. Where UNFPA works in 155 locations around the globe, we are already seeing that the pandemic is making certain inequalities worse. So you can imagine we're all asked to stay at home. Yet some women are very much at risk in their own homes. They can be confined with an abusive partner or cut off from a support system. And already I'm hearing reports of increasing domestic violence. So this is a parallel crisis. We've seen this in other times before. And so to see the hotline response skyrocket during this period tells me that we have to pay attention to certain particular vulnerabilities that women face.
In what areas of the world are you finding this type of violence?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Of course, UNFPA and the whole of the United Nations focuses on vulnerable countries, developing countries. But as you and the audience will be well aware, COVID has affected Europe and USA, of course, and a lot of developed countries, as well as countries that are still lower income. So everywhere in the world, we are seeing the skyrocketing increase. And the worry is that our services keeping up, our outreach for mental health, for counseling, and for safe shelter. So whether it's France or UK or USA, absolutely the incidence is increasing. But our worry is about places where services are not obviously available, or where midwives in particular, who are really important for response, may not be at the clinic when the woman from a rural community in one of the developing countries gets there. So you can imagine if on a normal course of circumstance, you may not have permission to leave your house without that husband, without that father, without that partner, without that mother-in-law saying it's okay. So during this time, we have heightened concern, and there are things that we're trying to call for action to do for that.
Also, there's another aspect as well, not just women who are in abusive or in violent relationships. What are some examples of countries that are not able to provide women with reproductive health services? You mentioned, for instance, midwives.
Well, it's so interesting that, you know, the cycle of life goes on, thank goodness. This is one of the things that unites us as humanity. So women continue to get pregnant. They continue to give birth, even during the COVID pandemic. But we are seeing sexual and reproductive health services like caring for the prenatal visit, like having that midwife there to be able to guide a woman through a difficult pregnancy, to look after safe birth. So I will say that as UNFPA works with government and partners in places like Jordan, in Lebanon, in Yemen, which already had a humanitarian crisis, we are working to equip rural midwives like in Eastern and Southern Africa. They're very key to the response. So UNFPA is providing information. We're providing training and support. And knowing that 70% of the health workers tend to be women, we're also advocating for those masks, for that protective equipment, for whatever they need to be safe while they're treating people with COVID, that this be provided in a speedy and timely fashion.
During pandemics such as this one, there are women out there on the front lines. So how are the psychosocial needs of women healthcare workers on the front line different from men on the front line?
Well, you know, that's such a great question, Kim, and there are a number of ways. First of all, while women tend to be the majority of the health work sector, like I said, it's 70%, almost three quarters, they're not necessarily in the decision-making positions. So what we are saying is that women need to be at that table. They need to be involved and included. Because you can imagine, here you are a nurse, you're a midwife, you're a cleaner in a hospital setting. During the time of COVID, you're at higher risk and you're terrified. You don't want to bring that virus home to your home, to your community, to that environment where you dwell. So it's very, very important to prioritize the needs of women health workers. But beyond that, many women do not wish to become pregnant during an epidemic. So a lot of times the disruptions in the supply chain means that okay, that pharmacy may not be open. Your supply of birth control may not be right there for you. You know, especially younger women of childbearing age, the messaging that you're getting about how do you continue to protect yourself and the baby as you are pregnant? Where will you deliver if you need a cesarean section? All of these are the daily dramas that we are facing as women's centers are closing. We're proud that UNFPA has been able to keep a lot of our UNFPA-supported clinics going in a place like Syria, where some of our partners are minimizing operations. Some of our safe spaces have had to close down. But in other places, we are able to provide those supplies, that healthcare. Latin America and the Caribbean, we're trying to match the supply chain with the demand. All of these are problems that we review minute to minute to make sure that we can deliver for women and girls on the front lines and also women and girls at home.
Would you say that there are more women on the front line providing medical services and social care right now during this pandemic? And if so, are they being affected more by this virus?
100% yes. And we see that in every country, everywhere. Well, first of all, like I said, in the healthcare setting, the majority are women, 70%. But when we think of who's taking care of elderly, sadly, this COVID epidemic has been shattering lives for older people who may or may not be living in the household with their family, with their loved ones. But whether they're at home or in a nursing home situation or wherever they may be, it's women typically who are going to be the ones caring for them before and after work or during the time of safe distancing and being at home, et cetera, et cetera. It typically does fall to that mom, to that woman, to organize the household, to look at how are we going to do the hand washing, how are we going to sanitize our surroundings. So whether she is in a rural setting where, you know, water, as you know, can be very precious in a lot of the societies where we are working, we don't take for granted that you turn on a tap and the water comes. You may have to go and reach that stream with a bucket in the morning. Whatever the situation is, women must be protected. And certainly, I think special attention has to be given to the health and the psychosocial needs of those women on the front lines, in clinics, in hospitals, but also at home. The other thing I just want to put on the table, Kim, and you know, UNFPA is bound to do this. There is still a lot of discrimination against women and girls. There is still a lot of barriers to them getting the right life-saving information that they need. So we really advocate for women to speak up, to say what it is that they need, and not to be shy about explaining that, you know, this is what's going to be essential for me. to prevent COVID, or if I'm affected, for my family member or for myself to get that care that they need without discrimination, without judgment.
Okay, thank you so much. We're going to take just a short break, and then we'll be right back with the program. You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Dr. Natalia Kinem, Executive Director of the United Nations Sexual and Reproductive Health Agency, UNFPA. I'm Kim Lewis. We're talking about how disease outbreaks and pandemics, such as COVID-19, may trigger and increase violence and exploitation of women and girls. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Here's a shout out to our loyal listener and Facebook fan, Najib Hedron from Pattaya, Afghanistan. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. Now back to our program with Dr. Kinem. Dr. Kinem, I just wanted to ask you a question that really focuses on the girls, young girls. What terrors, I guess you can call it, are they facing during pandemics, especially if they're already in a household that is abusive or in an environment that is abusive?
Well, you know, again, I want to say over and over that every girl, every woman, every human being deserves full dignity. They deserve full respect. No one should use the COVID pandemic as an excuse to abuse someone else. So we are hoping to make very clear that the girl owns her body and her situation, and that she should speak up if she feels uncomfortable about anything. Now, you can understand that a lot of people are in very close quarters, and during times of isolation, curfew, et cetera, some people can see this as an opportunity to become a predator against a girl or a woman. So it's critical to educate the girl herself. I want every girl listening to us to know that it is her right to live free of violence and abuse, and that she should reach out and people will help her. A trusted family member, a neighbor, somebody in the family who can intercede, and that if she is uncomfortable about what is going on, she should not be silent. So I think very broadly, we have seen from past epidemic situations, like when Ebola hit West Africa, that girls were vulnerable to becoming pregnant, and some of them against their will. We also saw that the rates of physical violence, and this is extremely tragic, because here you have people who are under stress. Rather than supporting this girl, they're lashing out against her. The backdrop being that the data are pretty shocking on a day-to-day basis anyway, when there is no pandemic. We know that almost 1 in 3 women and girls would have been affected by physical or sexual abuse in her lifetime. So ending violence against women, I always say, requires the active involvement of men and boys. These Absolutely. Are important allies. Yes.
No, I was just going to say that was going to be my next question, is how important is it to educate men and boys in this area?
Well, there is nothing more important than to see that father, that brother, that friend stick up for women and girls who may be vulnerable to abuse. And I think boys as allies have been really, really interesting. UNFPA works with young people all around the world. And what we see is that adolescent boys, the guys, are really using things like sports. They're using some of the online and phone platforms to be very supportive to their sisters, to their mothers, to women in the community. For example, in West Africa, UNFPA runs a husband school. Men actually congregate together. Typically, it's a midwife who's like the facilitator, and they talk with each other about the importance of understanding that women are the backbone of the family. How can we be supportive to our daughters? How can we make sure that they are not married too young and things like this? So I believe that at the policy level, of course, that's important for men to support correct policies. But at the same time, at the community level, the voice of men in supporting their daughters and wives and moms, very, very important.
Yes, it is. And just looking at developed countries and developing countries, what parallels do you see between the challenges facing both of these types of countries?
Well, you know, that's a great question. That's a great question because we've seen that the pandemic of COVID, coronavirus, has really swept across countries which are actually financially better off, but there's been a great equalizer in one sense. So what we're seeing is that whether you're in India or Indiana, there are a lot of parallels in terms of anxieties over having to be at home. This is one of the biggest movement restrictions on a scale never seen before. We also know that everywhere in the world, there are shortages of the equipment. We've heard about the ventilators and the masks and things like that, which are affecting rich countries just as much as countries that are still on the poor developing spectrum. And we've also seen the challenges to babies being delivered safely everywhere. Because, you know, there have been discussions in countries with very strong health systems about whether or not the husband can come in when the baby is being delivered. These are challenges that we would normally only see during humanitarian scale. So we see similarities and we also see grave differences. Of course, it's better to be in a situation where you have a health system to begin with. And even within health systems, people who are on the disadvantaged part of the scale will be affected and suffer more. They may have more of those underlying conditions. They may come from a demographic where we're seeing in the USA, for example, African American and indigenous populations, Native Americans, disproportionately affected. In other countries like Italy, which, by the way, is the country with the second largest proportion of elderly people. So it's a great place to live long. But of course, this was an underlying factor in the Italian experience. There are challenges that are showing me that the world is united, that no matter where you are, the dots connect. And so as a data agency, the UN Population Fund, UNFPA, we are trying to analyze these differentials, showing the commonality, but also showing who is at risk and what can we do to really prepare and prevent.
And in looking at this, what main advice is the UNFPA giving to nations that are in the relatively early stages of tackling this pandemic, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa, to be able to ensure that women and girls are protected?
This is something that literally keeps me up at night because of two reasons. One, let's take the example of Africa and parts of Asia, where you already have a high proportion of the population living in poverty. They've got to earn their daily bread. It's not like they can stockpile supplies in a pantry, far from it. Missing a day means hunger. And now you also see that with the need to keep the population from mingling, these restrictions on movement, you know, have meant a lot of job loss. And United Nations has been in the forefront of sounding the alarm. Our Secretary General has said, we cannot forget the most vulnerable, that the world is only as strong as its weakest health system. So the advice that we are giving is that we have to bolster the normal health system. Please don't take the midwife from where she has been saving lives in her clinic and send her to the big city hospital. We need to make sure that we keep the spread of the health system working. And as many countries are already ill-equipped to deal with this type of pandemic, this is where international solidarity comes in. And, you know, countries like the United States, one of the founders of the UN, have always been extremely generous right at the top of the humanitarian concerns. So the ability to deploy that to be able to help places like in Eastern and Southern Africa, in countries where there are no ICUs in West and Central Africa, parts of Asia, India, Indonesia, where, you know, in a rural area, we really depend on that support from donors. It has been so extremely important to have that commitment, to have that availability, to be able to move quickly to help people to stay safe and to stay healthy.
And the way this pandemic seems to be moving, do you see more cases happening in Africa and in other places that where there are a lot of developing countries?
Well, I think absolutely, as an epidemiologist, you know, I'm a pediatrician, but I specialized in the study of epidemics. So it's been pretty harrowing for me and a lot of my colleagues, the World Health Organization, UNICEF, we're all joining hands to look at this from that lens. And what worries me is that, you know, Kim, if you're not testing, you may not know that the epidemic has already arrived. And many of the countries who don't have a strong health system are at a big disadvantage. They're behind the eight ball because we don't really have ready access to testing there. Once this COVID coronavirus takes hold, it is so contagious and it can be really very quickly lethal. So yes, we do expect that we are going to have some instances of high levels of infection. And this is why the simple hand washing that we recommend is so, so important. If that route of transmission is going to be from people not washing their hands, you know, introducing this into their lungs, through their mouth, through their nose, it's really, really going to be so important in close quarters, in slum communities, in rural areas, for us to spread that word. My best ally right now is all of the hundreds of thousands of young people who understand the message that UNFPA is putting out there. Put young people in charge of correct messaging so that they can advocate against violence. They can advocate for safe birth pregnancy, making sure that birth control is available for women who are asking for it. All of these are going to be very protective and prepare people to get through this and to build back better on the other side of it, hopefully.
And I just wanted to go back. You had mentioned girls and women need to really go and tell someone if they feel that something isn't right in their household or in their community or, you know, between someone else. So to do this, how can they really empower themselves inside so they're not afraid to speak out?
Well, one of the things which I find is that with knowledge, girls feel their power. So you can imagine if you are insecure, you're not really sure, you don't know that you have a choice to say no, especially to somebody who may be older than you. It's, you know, a male figure. So breaking the silence is really, really important. It should be normal and natural for us to say to girls as they're growing up, if you do not wish to kiss or shake hands or be near to someone, you have a choice. Choice is really important also. Girls should be informed when people say to you, keep this a secret and don't tell. The first thing you should do is run and tell your mom, run and tell your aunt, run and tell your dad. You do not have to follow orders that make you uncomfortable. Now, this is something that's extremely sensitive because the family is there to protect the girl. The family is there to educate her and to empower her. So if there is an outlier, somebody who is making this girl feel that she is being forced to do things, it should be normal and natural for us to encourage her to speak up, to listen to her, and to inquire and follow up. So I believe that the system has to be ready to receive crisis. You know, there are times when you've got to get the girl or the woman out of that situation separate her from that household immediately. This is why UNFPA is funding hotlines and also safe shelters. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. We're using some creative techniques to be able to have people locate on their phone. Where could they go? What do they say to the pharmacist if they need protection or help? But for me, very sincerely, the basic protection is for that girl to understand, you know what, I have rights. I should be respected. I can speak up. I don't have to be shy to say, no. I the ability to say no is absolutely crucial. So please let us all endeavor to encourage girls to be able to take their place and not to feel shy, that they are their own person and that they should be respected and live in dignity.
Excellent. And just one last question to end, Dawn, and that is, you had mentioned creative ways that you all are reaching young women and girls. How is social media used? What role is it playing in the way you all are communicating with women and girls?
This is such a great question, and it's so important to understand that social media, including the phone, because not everybody may be connected by web, but that is a lifeline for a whole lot of situations, and this is one of them. UNFPA has very strong connections through social media. For example, there is an app called Flow, F-L-O, and Flow started off as something to help women track their menstrual periods, which, by the way, also don't stop during a pandemic. So we are very busy trying to provide supplies for menstruation all over the world right now in our dignity kits. But this Flow app, which reaches over 30 million women and girls all over the world, is working with UNFPA for two purposes. One is to spread accurate information about what to do if you feel threatened or are in an abusive situation, but also what to do if you are pregnant during the time of COVID. This is really, really something that we want to emphasize. Women will still need safe birth, even during the coronavirus pandemic, and we're working with Flow on this. But in small communities in Kenya, in Eastern Europe, in Latin America, we've also set up two aspects of social media. One is to let people tell their own stories. So many girls are very interested to hear from others who may be going through what they're going through. Do you know that we estimate only 1 in 100 girls will seek help, even when they're being forced and coerced into having unwanted sexual relations? So we need to speak out about these things, and the web can be a platform that girls learn from, but also gives them a voice. And secondly, we are using apps to be able to help young people track and disperse correct messaging. One of the problems is that you can get a lot of misinformation as well as correct information. So we've tuned in to, you name it, from the Scouts to little school clubs to whatever it is, to be able to provide them with great graphics and friendly, simple messages in their own language that young people can take the ball and run with it. We're a trusted source of this kind of information, and we build our platforms together with young people. So we see it as a good virtuous cycle. They're contributing. We're giving them all their possible leadership ability to be able to do this, and then we all benefit from it.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We'll have to end on that note. Dr. Natalia Kanem is Executive Director of the United Nations Sexual and Reproductive Health Agency, UNFPA. Thank you, Natalia, for sharing your terrific insights on how women and girls are particularly vulnerable during the coronavirus pandemic. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. I'm Kim Lewis. Join us again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.